"Go get your things, Andrew, my boy," Mr. Hopkins said. "You're invited to come live with Mrs. Hopkins and myself for a few days until we find some work." It didn't take long to pack one suitcase. While I was putting away my toothbrush and razor, one of the WEC workers told me a little about Mr. Hopkins. He was a successful contractor, yet he lived in penury. 9/10 of his income he gave away to various missions. WEC was only one of his great-hearted concerns. Within a few moments I was standing at the front door saying goodbye to the staff. "The building looks beautiful, Andy," the director said, shaking hands.
"Danko."
"Let's hear that th."
"Thank you."
Everyone laughed as William Hopkins and I walked down the steps to his truck. The Hopkins living quarters on the Thames River were about what I would have expected. Simple, warm, homey. Mrs. Hopkins was an invalid. She spent most days in bed, but she did not object to my intrusion.
"You make yourself to home here," she greeted me. "You'll discover where the cupboard is, and you'll learn that the front door is never on the latch."
Then she turned to her husband, and I saw in her eyes the same sparkle I had seen in his.
"And don't be surprised should you find a stray in your bed some night. It has happened. If by chance it happens again, there's blankets and pillows in the living room, and you can make a bedroll by the fire."
Before the week was over, I was to discover how literally these words were meant. One evening, when I came back to the house, after another long and fruitless wait at the work permit office, I found both Mr. and Mrs. Hopkins sitting in the living room.
"Don't bother to go up to your room, Andrew," Mrs. Hopkins said. "There's a drunk in your bed. We've had our tea, but we saved you some."
As I ate my meal in front of the fire, she told me about the man in my bed. Chiefly, to get out of the rain, he had come into the little storefront mission Mr. Hopkins ran, and Mr. Hopkins had brought him home.
"When he wakes up, we'll find him some food and some clothes," Mrs. Hopkins said. "I don't know where they'll come from, but God will supply."
And God did. On this and on the dozens of similar occasions while I stayed with the Hopkinses, I saw God meet their practical needs in the most unusual ways. Never once did I see anyone go hungry or coatless from their house. It wasn't that they had money. From the profits of Mr. Hopkins' construction business, they kept just enough to supply their own modest needs. Strangers, such as myself, and the beggars and streetwalkers and drunks who passed continually through their doors, had to be fed by God, and he never failed. Perhaps it was a neighbour dropping by with a casserole,
"just in case you're not feeling up to cooking tonight, ducky."
Perhaps it was an old debt, unexpectedly paid, or one of the previous bed tenants returning to see if he could help.
"Yes, son, you can. We have an old man in the bed upstairs tonight who has no shoes. Do you think if we measured his feet you might find him a pair?"
I had intended to stay with the Hopkinses only a day or two, until I got my working papers and found a job.